from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we'll be continuing with our conversation with Dr. Henry Grayson. In the second part of our program, we're inviting a longer conversation on the science and methods to use our body to heal our mind. And you'll have a chance to call in on that. Also today, several commentaries to round out this particular week. And I'm going to share some on why genetically modified soy linked to illnesses in farm pigs. For those of you pork, you'll find this interesting. Michael Payne from Op-Ed News, as empire consumes America, a pervasive silence engulfs our society. From Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, can the world survive Washington's hubris? And time permitting, Haiti, humanitarian aid for earthquake victims, is going instead to build five-star hotels. Thank you, President Clinton. I'll give you insights on all those, and then have an opportunity for you to give us some feedback and tell us what you think. Normally, I would start my program with the latest on health and nutrition, and indeed, I will get to that information in just a few moments. But because of passage of the Obamacare by the Supreme Court ruling it's all right, and that's going to be the law of the land at this time, which I haven't had a chance to watch television or be on the internet or answer mail. I was only informed about it by one of the other hosts on the air yesterday. Now this morning, I've taken a look at the different websites to see how it's being covered. Pretty much down the following lines. The Republicans are against it because of what it's going to cost in the way of taxes, other problems economically, and including a lot of the people and Medicaid, that they're opposed to. And on the left, they think it's a great thing, a great victory. I disagree with both. I just want to share my thoughts on this. The majority of the analysis I find against Obamacare are from right-wing think tanks, and there's a lot of them. So they're all tilted against those things in the plan that levy taxes on health corporations and increase penalties. So that's actually a good thing behind the plan. Other right-wing criticism is that it puts 18 million uninsured into the Medicaid program. So that has to be taken as a good thing. Of course, the right wing is adamantly against health care for all. But when you consider how many people need health care and cannot afford it, and how many children need it and can't afford it, then the obvious best solution from the beginning and even today would be a single payer for all who need it, as other countries have done. But that's not even in anyone's consciousness on the left or the right in policymaking positions. The plan gives $125 million of the individuals in this country towards school-based health center subsidies for programs on teen pregnancy, and right-wingers hate this because the plan is not anti-abortion. One good thing, insurance companies can no longer deny children coverage for pre-existing conditions. This benefit applies to adults in 2014. Also, insurance companies can no longer drop anyone from coverage once they get sick. The Affordable Care Act fails, however, and this is where I'm opposed to it. It fails to address the cost of American health care delivery because the central feature of Obamacare, which was written exclusively by the health care insurers, the pharmaceutical industry, and for-profit hospital corporations, they wrote it, and they're going to reap hundreds of billions of dollars because Obamacare is forced into an alliance on the private health insurance industry business model known as the individual mandate. Private health insurance is the most wasteful way to pay for health care ever invented. With excess administrative costs going about 35 cents out of every dollar, and that is a little over $400 billion a year. That's pure profit, $400 billion. And they made sure that they got all that money. It is expected that smaller employer coverage will be hurt a lot. For example, healthcare costs will rise up to $47 billion due to new taxes on drug companies and medical device makers, and they're going to pass that along. Two-thirds of doctors will abandon government-sponsored health insurance because regulations are too great and reimbursement is too low. In fact, as we speak, probably 80% of the alternative health care doctors in the United States and many chiropractors simply refuse to go through the hassle and the low payment and say to the person, cash only. And that's becoming ever more common, but now it's going to become ever more common with mainstream doctors. In fact, they claim that despite $500 billion in new taxes, Obamacare will increase deficit by $500 billion over 10 years. And that could be debatable. But then there is this, and here's why they missed it on both sides. Totally missed it. And they left it out of the argument. One, the largest single expenditures in the world each year is on the American healthcare system. This year we'll hit $3 trillion. $3 trillion. All right? That is the highest per person and per family in the world. But do we get high-quality medical care for that? No, we do not. Is anybody in this program debating the cost of a hospital bed in just a regular hospital without any medical treatment, nursing treatment, food, or medicine? Costs as much as a suite in the Waldorf Astoria. Did anyone figure out how in the world that happens? Yeah, if you're a for-profit hospital, you can charge whatever you want. Is that going to be affected? Not at all. What if they're now charging you $40,000 for a particular operation or $2,000 for a single injection of a chemotherapy agent, irrespective if it works or doesn't work? Will that be reduced to a reasonable cost, or could Medicare, Medicaid, or VA's hospitals then get that generic, maybe a $2,000 an injection drug for $20, its actual cost? The answer is no. They wrote the law. They protected their profit base. Just the pharmaceutical industry alone can expect to reap upwards of $500 billion to $1 trillion in excess profits in the next 10 years because of how they wrote the law. So all these very expensive medical procedures and all these very expensive tests and all these excessive tests, are they going to at least get rid of the excessive testing, which is, represents almost a half of a hospital bill once you've been tested? No, they won't. Why? Because defensive medicine is now the norm. They will test you, x-ray you, CAT scan you. They will do blood workups galore because the profit is in every single procedure they do. Someone makes an enormous amount of money off of it. But doesn't that asshole put the patient at risk? Yes, it does. You start giving unnecessary x-rays, the patient could end up dying of a cancer from those unnecessary x-rays. Do we need all these tests? No, we do not. But currently, because we have refused to acknowledge that what we should have, any sane government, any sane people would say, let's have no-fault health insurance. That means you cannot sue a doctor, you cannot sue a nurse or hospital. If you are injured, then the compensation to you will be based upon what losses you have from your normal work, but there will be no penalties, and there'll be no these, you know, excessive amounts that were lobbied for by the trial lawyers and the ambulance chasers. That would bring down the cost of medical care substantially, and it also would eliminate defensive medicine, because now they want to make sure you can't sue them. If you do, you can't win. So they test you for everything, even if you just went in to have a routine test. So we're going to be excessively tested. This costs us billions. We're going to have excessive medicalization. We're going to keep people who are insured in positions where the insurance is reimbursing a hospital longer. Do you ever notice when you don't have the insurance how quickly they find a reason to get you out of that center? But most importantly from my perspective is, with no reduction in hospital costs, no reduction in drug costs, no reduction in excessive testing, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry, the Volume 5, coming out now, will put anywhere from 30 to 50 million Americans into the medical system, which is a pure profit stream for all the hospitals, psychiatric hospitals. Expect to see a boom in psychiatric hospitals. expect to see more Americans mandatorily required to take a mental health screening test. Expect teen screen to become mandatory in every state, where they determine whether or not you have a mental illness. And as we've already seen from this completely fraudulent notion that there's a brain chemical imbalance, which there is not, they can say, oh, as they did to one young teenager who innocently answered a simple teen scream, they had her forcibly taken from her home, put into a psychiatric institution for 6 months, gave her every possible type of medication, and at the end of it, why? And her parents weren't allowed to see her. Because she said that she didn't like to go and party. Ooh, that must be social anxiety disorder. And she liked to keep her room neat. Ooh, that's obsessive compulsive disorder. You think I'm making it up? It's true. Now multiply that times 30, 40 million people that just normal behavior or normal ways of acting through any kind of problem is now pathologized, and just happy as can be are the pharmaceutical reps, the pharmaceutical companies, the fraudulent science, pseudoscience we call psychiatry, the abuse in that entire industry. Is there anything but abuse? And the people making the money. So once again, the insurance companies make money, the hospitals make money, the drug companies make money, and everyone else suffers. So you just put that in there. And also, what does it mean when you have mandated medical care? It means that no longer will a physician be able to determine what is in the best interest of that patient. You virtually have taken away the power of good quality physicians to take the time and show the interest in coming to the underlying cause of an imbalance in the patient and then seeking the most effective and reasonable and non-toxic ways of helping them. As a result, you must use certain testing procedures. You must come to certain diagnostic procedures that are not only mandated but coded. So you have to give a code to the condition and the patient, which then follows with a whole line of treatment, all of which is a profit stream, a massive profit stream, unheard of profits. Now, just so I could go to Washington, I thought I would be invited down when they were having the healthcare debates. I prepared a chart. It was a chart that had never been seen except by Bill Falloon and Life Extension that was substantially responsible for the background research on this. And in this chart, they're simply the top 10 drugs given in the United States. Those drugs have a profit margin based upon the generic 30-day cheap version of the drug that was from 3,000% profit to 500,000% profit. You heard me right. Could you imagine being able to sell a drug to a hospital, the hospital then mandating it if anyone who is coded in a therapeutic model to receive it, where the drug itself costs under 20 cents per month for a month's supply, and you're selling it for $400. Think of what it cost us because we end up paying for it, we the citizens. The insurance companies won't pay for it. The hospitals won't pay for it. The pharmaceutical companies, they make an enormous amount of money. So had I gone into Congress and testified, I would have shown charts, flow charts, of the top 10 drugs, how much percentage of profit they make over the generic brand, how much that would have saved over $400 billion a year on our healthcare programs. But instead, I wasn't invited. No one I know in the alternative movement, irrespective of their qualifications, was allowed to testify. But they did allow all of the shills, those people pimping for the big pharmaceutical companies, to come from the think tanks, and both left and right think tanks, and tell us how important this Obamacare was. They had sold out. People with truth were denied access. Hence, the public saw a very narrow range of conversation. And finally, not only will doctors then be nothing more than technicians with the right to practice medicine completely gone, there is no measure of prevention in this bill. There is no emphasis upon how in the world are we becoming the sickest nation per population in the world. We're the most obese per population. We have more children with adult diabetes than anywhere else in the world. We have more arthritis, cancer, heart disease, inflammatory conditions, all due through lifestyle. So wouldn't you think that if you're spending $3 trillion, that someone, somewhere, in some governmental agency, the president, will forget him, his wife, not a clue, all members of the cabinet, ditto, and the National Institute of Health, the FDA commissioner, the Surgeon General, someone at the National Cancer Institute, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, someone, anyone, in that cesspool, that decrepit, corrupt little cesspool called Washington, D.C., do you think anyone would ask, how come we're so sick? Duh. No one asked that because they all know that once you step on that little landmine, you can't take your foot off. Because the moment that door opens and everything that we do that is patently provable that causes us disease would then be made public. The hamburgers, the hot dogs, the french fries, the colas, the artificial sweeteners, the fertilizers that are synthetic, the pesticides are synthetic, the artificial dyes, the stress we live under, the air particulate matter, the water particulate matter, all of this would come to fruition and we would be saying, then gee whiz, but all these are advertisers. These are campaign contributors. These are part of super PAC groups. You're dealing with some of the Fortune 500 top people. These are heavyweight people. They're on the Council on Foreign Relations. They're on the Trilateral Commission. They're on the Bilderberg. These are people that own us, control us. How in the world are we supposed to say they're doing anything wrong? We can't do that. So close that door. We will never again in American history talk about anything that causes disease. And if we do have to, we'll drag out that dead old dog and say, don't smoke so much and don't get excessive sunshine. And everything else is fine. It must be in your genes. When we know that 98% of all disease is what we do for ourselves, having nothing to do with genes. So you think that maybe we have anyone willing to talk about what actually causes us to spend $3 trillion a year? We have no voice at all. If there was a voice, it is not given a form. If it tried to speak out, it was criminalized, harassed, marginalized. So the next time that you hear one of the people on the left or the right proclaiming how this is good, it's unfortunate that they lack any sense of understanding the true problem. Maybe they haven't been around there. Maybe some of the people who are supporting this ought to go on a diet themselves. How can someone morbidly obese be talking about a health care plan that helps some people when they're not even able to help themselves? What are we afraid of when it comes to looking at the nature of disease? What are we afraid of? So we'd rather be politically aligned and politically correct with our ideologies and look at the truth that we're an out-of-control, obsessed, completely indifferent nation to how we create the diseases that then we cannot afford, and then mandating how they're to be treated that has nothing to do with the reversal of disease. And finally, you destroy alternative therapy. You have nothing about prevention. You handicap every doctor in America and healthcare professional who knows how to treat disease and don't allow them to do it if it doesn't fall under one of the specific codes and guidelines. You corrupt the state medical boards. They're like a form of local enforcers. They're just imagine Joseph McCarthy overseeing how things are done in medicine. That's your state medical boards. You have the salespeople who, if they weren't selling aluminum siding or sliming under a door some way to get access, these are the drug detail people. You have massive profit taking from pharmaceutical industry, massive profit taking from insurance companies, massive profit taking from the for-profit hospitalizations. And yet you have no plan to build community-based hospitals that a person could go in and get high-quality alternative or whatever care they choose, getting generic drugs and getting good treatment for every community in the United States. That isn't given because, gee whiz, that would be actually helping people who need help. Instead, you sell it based upon this artificial volleyball that they're hitting back and forth across the net. This is absurd. You would think that somewhere in our society we would allow some people actually understand an issue from an alternative perspective to have some voice, and yet they're not a part of the official voices, so they're not in there anywhere. So now we will continue on, arguing on the issues from matters that are absurd. And will we prevent disease? Not at all. Will we increase disease? You bet. Will we increase iatrogenesis? Yes. Oh, did we forget that? Yes, we did. But maybe I'm just not aware that maybe someone out there in the debates about this health care bill actually asked a basic question. How good is our medical system? Isn't that what this is about? We're all starting off that it's the best. And I'm saying it's the worst. Do they have proof it's the best? They have no proof, zero proof. Outside of emergency medicine, it fails miserably. Do I have proof? Why don't you take the time and do a little scholarship and look what five MD PhDs who spent 5 years of their lives working on in a report that was sent to every member of Congress, every governor, every state legislator, and 7,000 members of the American media, 2,000 medical and scientific publications. In this report, fully footnoted, fully documented, using only their statistics, is called Death by Medicine. It was followed by a multi-award-winning documentary last year. It shows the number one cause of death in the United States is American medicine. So let me just get this right. I want to know that I have my logic right. So the more people that are covered under health insurance and mandated medical care, the more people will be killed and injured because of the very care that someone forgot to do their homework on because it wasn't a part of their political, ideological playbook for dummies. That's correct. And what are these numbers? Well, on the low end, you can look at from 5,000 to 700,000 low. But that's very conservative. On the more realistic end, it's upwards of 1 million. Who's not included? Anybody who dies at home. Well, gee whiz, isn't that a lot of people? That's an awful lot of people, but they're not in any official statistic. So you mean if we really had to put everybody who dies because of a mistake in the medication or medical treatment, the numbers would be a lot bigger? Lot bigger. So I'm taking the most conservative figures I can, and let's just use 600,000. That means that over the last 20 years, more Americans have died because of their doctors and drugs and medical procedures in these hospitals for profit, most of them under medical insurance, than died in all of American wars. Now, let's just figure this out. The Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the First, Second War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Iraq Wars, Afghanistan War, all these wars, I'm not including the Spanish Civil War and a few other incursions because we didn't leave us enough to make it statistically significant, but all of our wars. But let's go one step further. Let's say all of our injuries, all the people injured in all of American wars combined, all of the dead in American wars combined. And you know, in just that period of time, we outdid all that. That's medical genocide. You just maybe think for a second that there's some adults left in the room who have some sensibleness who would say maybe we ought to look whether or not we should reform or throw out the entire medical system, the paradigm, its medical school, its curriculum, its internship, its residency, which are abusive to the doctors, residents, and put the patient at risk. Try working someone 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week, and see how, if you'd want them to do a procedure or diagnosis on you. And get the profit out of medicine and at least have a way of treating people ethically, preventing disease where possible, giving the opportunity to get well and stay well, informing students about the role of different foods instead of promoting the foods that you know are going to cause disease. Imagine what a world that would be. So the next time you hear one of these supercilious pundits, left or right, on the blogosphere, mindlessly wailing away as if somehow it's a victory for us or a defeat for us, it is neither. It's absurdity for us. And I'm embarrassed by the entire left and the entire right for not having the decency, the efficacy, and the humility to take time before you spoke and did your homework and put a little scholarship into what you do. And that goes for people on this station who I'm embarrassed by the lack of their insight and scholarship. Just promoting a foolish, dangerous, deadly, disastrous program when if you just chose to do it, when you had the House, you had the Senate, you had everything, all you had to do then is just have something that worked. But no one chose. Instead, they aligned themselves with where the money flowed. And now you see how compromised even majorities that are supposed to be for the people are. They're not for the people. They've never been for the people. They're for themselves. When we see this, then you'll wonder why some of us will refuse to vote for the lesser of two evils, but will support those third-party candidates of your choice who have a mind and are not going to compromise it. I'm Gary Knoll. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours now. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And we'll take a moment to hear what you have to say on this. We'll come back. After that, we're going to my guest, who is standing by, and we'll spend some time with Dr. Henry Grayson. And we're going to talk about even good science, provable science, is not being translated into actual practice. Every day on this program, I cite with every single study, peer-reviewed literature, about how to prevent disease. You want to know what could help prevent an increase in, actually increase pancreatic cancer survival? Well, all you have to do is look at the peer-reviewed journal, because it's in there today. A major study, a major University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, the School of Pharmacy, came up with research. It showed that vitamin D increase, and that that increases a receptor gene associated with increased pancreatic cancer survival. It was published in the peer-reviewed literature, all passing the hallmark of good quality science. The Mayo Group, also a Mayo Clinic Group, did the same thing. You think maybe all the doctors in America would then start using testing for vitamin D to see if their patients have it, because it could save their lives with many conditions? Not at all. So good science doesn't mean it gets translated down into therapeutic care. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you on board. And just a thought for you, I want to say thank you to all of you who are causing the newest documentary, which we're giving free over the internet as a way of sharing the tools of social change in medicine, the war against health, the tyranny of the FDA, which is a part of this whole system. And by the way, the FDA is right behind supporting this care legislation, because it supports the pharmaceutical industry that controls the FDA. It supports genetic engineering, which is controlled by the FDA and Michael Taylor at the FDA, who came from Monsanto. So you got to understand, do the details, pull away each piece, see what's making it work, who it works for, and why it doesn't work for you. And so that's that. But this week alone, each day, I've been looking at the numbers of how many people going up to look at for information, either download or see what the trailer, and we're over 3.5 million people. How about that? So you think there's not a lot of people listening? Think again. Just this week, 3.5 million people. Unless I'm mistaken, Jason did the numbers that the Progressive Radio Network will be having ask Jason to come in the studio real quick, please, before we go to our guests and these calls. I believe I was told the correct figure. I don't want to misrepresent it. Jason, is it true or not true that at the current rate, we will have over 1.4 million brand new listeners this year, average age about 38 years of age, college graduate, listening from home, downloading the shows? Is that correct or incorrect? Myron, you're there. Can you answer that, please?
You've got it.
So that's ask correct. Yourself this. Does CNN, NBC, ABC, does Fox have 1,400,000 brand new listeners? No.
I doubt it. They're going. They're actually going down in their listenership and viewership.
So. Absolutely. We do. So just remember these numbers, people. When 3.5 million people just this week went up to see what's going on, that shows you that the progressive movement is alive and well and spreading. Spread the information. It's free to you. It's empowering to you. Share it with other people. Download it. Activists in particular. This is activist-oriented social issues that we've got to share to give people the tools they need, then to address the talking heads, the bought-out people, the politicians, and to make the laws work on our behalf. One other thing. Is it... okay, on your end, Myron. Myron is our social media director, and who's, by the way, doing a magnificent job of seeing that people get to watch the film if they choose to. Myron, what's the latest with you?
Well, I got to say, I want to just tell people and remind them that no matter how you feel about the Supreme Court decision to uphold Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, I wanted to just put a different light on it and talk about how much it strengthens the FDA. Because the FDA is where most insurance companies choose to choose whether they're going to allow people to or pay for people to get that care or not, and the FDA is the one who looks over the data and gets to tell people what's effective and not effective according to what they think. So this documentary really exposes the FDA in that and shows how we can't really trust them. So giving them this power that's even more shrouded now, they're even more buffered by this law, because now it's not a choice anymore whether to get insurance or not. The FDA is basically has carte blanche to and a much larger market. So I would just encourage people, and even if you know you disagree or agree, you should know what the FDA's history is, their historical ways of.
We pull all the curtains back and show you who's behind the FDA, who the people are, name them, show their faces, their background, their interconnections, how much money they got, where they get the money from, what did they vote for after they got money, who were the lobbying organizations behind these, what is the science and efficacy and safety of these drugs, which there are not. And how do they come up with these magic numbers of being able to prevent a certain disease when they don't? And we show all that. This is important. Now, you add this to death by medicine and prescription for disaster and the drugging of our children, those four documentaries, you see why they might be a little nervous and have to have laws in place that don't allow us an opportunity to see the truth, hiding all the facts. Thank you very much.
Sure. I just want to add one more thing about an upcoming screening of American Veterans Discarded and Forgotten, your film that debuted before this one, the FDA one. It's going to be at the Torrington, Connecticut Litchfield Hills Film Festival. That's Sunday, July 1st, 12:45. We do need a driver to take you to the screening. So if anybody out there wants to come out, just call 646-926-5426. So that's 646-926-5426, and we'll get you out there to watch this great screening.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to it because we have two films in competition. We have Knocking on the Devil's Door, Daniel Nikolaevsky Legacy, and we have American Veterans. And I've been doing a lot of talking on radio shows around America, promoting the needs of vets and to help them. So I'm glad those are two in competition. But when anyone who drives up, we'll have a chance to see some of the other films. All these directors and producers from all over the world are meeting there. This is one of the best film festivals in the world, so I'm happy to take time to go up there, spend an afternoon, and then they have the award ceremony. I don't know if we'll win or even be nominated, but it's nice to be around all these people and see what they're doing and see some cutting-edge and important, especially those documentaries that are progressive in theme. So give a call if you can take time off on Sunday to drive up and drive back. And thank you. Now let's say hello. And by the way, Dr. Henry Grayson's on the line. Now we're going to go to him in a moment, and we're going to give him the rest of the show. But I wanted, and Dr. Grayson is one of our nation's leading mind-body spiritual psychologists and a pioneer in spiritual-based energy psychology. He is the founder and chairman emeritus of the National Institute for the Psychotherapies in New York City. And he was the founding director of the Institute of Spirituality, Science, and Psychotherapy. And he's also past president of the Association of Spirituality and Psychotherapy. And he is an author of a very important book, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. revolutionary tools to release all barriers to health, healing, and happiness. And we're going to go to him in just a moment. But as we always do, we like to hear from people in the audience. Now I'm going to go through these real quick. So if you could keep your answers short, I would appreciate it. Chris from Queens, your turn, please.
I just had a call in to throw in my two cents regarding the mandate. You had a guest on, I believe, on your Monday evening program. I don't remember his name, but he made a statement that stayed with me. He said the problem is that very often Americans can't make the distinction between principle and purpose or goal. And I want to tie that into the individual mandate. The point here wasn't about a win for President Obama, which I guess you could call it that since the election is coming up. The point is whether it is constitutional in this country for a private insurance company to make a decision that if citizens are forced to buy something, it's like going into a store and you're forced to purchase something against your will. This is not a social program like Social Security is. So the disappointment that I feel on the part of the so-called left, I mean, the dishonesty is unbearable. First of all, President Obama had stated himself in an interview with George Stephanopoulos that this was not a tax back in 2010. The reason that they were able to rule it constitutional was because the lawyers, White House lawyers, said that this was now going to be considered a tax. And since it was a tax, it fell under the jurisdiction of the Congress, and Congress can impose taxes. This was totally contrary to what President Obama had sold it as, which was not a tax. All right? That was one point. And the next point was that this is an open question. They're mandating citizens, even though they may not want, I mean, some people don't want to buy insurance when they're 20 and 30 years old. You know, they're young. Maybe they'd rather pay out of their pocket in the event that they have to go. Why are they mandated to buy insurance, but doctors, on the other hand, have no mandate to accept all insurances? I happen to know for a fact an acquaintance of mine who went to a doctor and they wouldn't accept the insurance any longer. So they have an option of, you know, the option of opting out of accepting insurance, but meanwhile the American citizen is obligated to buy insurance. The point here is that it's not a matter of whether a few more people are going to be covered in this particular instance. It was whether this was constitutional under the American law. This is not a social program. If this had been mandated as, you know, the way Social Security is, it would be a totally different discussion. I just wanted to put that out there because people are not talking about that.
I agree, Chris, but if people are going to be so angry and outspoken, pro and con this, why, if this is a constitutional issue, why is it that those people who consider themselves in favor of the Constitution have kept completely quiet on the National Defense Appropriation Act, the Homeland Security Act, the Patriot Act, and all these executive orders? Why aren't they speaking out as voraciously as they could on those? Also, even if you were insured on this, they do not limit the premiums. So you could afford the insurance maybe this year, but what happens when you can't afford it because the insurance company is not in any way limited to how much they can charge you? My insurance just went up 10% just in the last week from my last policy, and sometimes it can go up as much as 20%. The insurance industry is there for profit, not for seeing people's health as well established and well guarded. I hope people watch Michael Moore's film Sicko to give an idea of how clear it is when you're fully insured and denied coverage. That is also what I hear you just say, and that is not addressed at all. Thank you, Chris. Ed from New Jersey, your time. Drew from Harlem, your turn.
How are you doing, Gary? My question is this. You know, I feel you on being an activist, but it's hard when you encounter so many people who just don't seem to care or are wrapped up in disillusion that, well, the government wouldn't really try to hurt you. Like, I had a conversation with a lady in my building, and I told her all these things about the government and what have you, and I gave her all sorts of information, and she admitted to me that she just kind of blocked me out because she just loves Obama. It doesn't matter what I say.
Okay, then don't be frustrated. If she is the opinion and others the opinion our government wouldn't hurt anyone, then why don't they rewatch the interview on 60 Minutes many years ago with Madeleine Albright, then our Secretary of the State, with Leslie Stahl, where Leslie Stahl stated, isn't it true that 500,000 Iraqi babies and children have died because of sanctions? And isn't that important? And Madeleine Albright says, no, that's an acceptable loss. So when we can allow the death of 500,000 children that are not our children, and that's acceptable, what kind of sensitivity test do you have to have before we get the point that using white phosphorus and Fallujah and denying it and all the other crimes against humanity we've engaged in, but somehow in the eyes of Bill O'Reilly, we're exceptional and no one can criticize us. If you criticize anything we do, you're criticizing everything we do. Therefore, there is no margin. Everything's black and white. Nice to be one of those crusaders, Bill. And if this was 1296, I could see you leading a whole group of people, your listeners, Rush Limbaugh's listeners, Sean Hannity's listeners, Mark Levin's listeners, Michael Savvy's listeners. I could see you on a trip to Jerusalem. Swear I could. Thank you for your call. Final call. Let's take one more. Paul from Staten Island.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's really interested in the truth. They're interested in just arguing and who's going to win. I mean, it's so, I think that's the biggest problem here. There's no examination of the issues, the deeper, and giving both sides of the story, and then getting down to, okay, well, what's correct and what's true?
Well, look at it this way. When we wanted to go before Congress, when they were talking about the appointment of a Secretary of Agriculture, and we had 22 people that we were going to nominate who had backgrounds in farming, sustainable farming, were not affiliated with any special interest groups, none of those were even considered. But the guys from who supported genetic engineering, they got the nod. Same thing at the FDA. Same thing with Codex Alimentarius. Same thing when challenging the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, based upon opinion only. So when you bring in individuals who are expert in a given area, who have a truth that is not aligned with a body politic or an economic outcome, they're always denied a seat at the table. So the only time we have a chance to have an argument on these issues is on some alternative forum, like this one, where we do not censor and we do not limit a person's opportunity to share their points of view. On the mainstream media, it's always a form of self-censorship or making sure that you do not lose access to your official sources. Therefore, you have to be very careful what you say, how you say it, and place no direct blame. It's just foolish. Thank you very much. Next up, my guest, he's here now with us. Let's say hello to Dr. Henry Grayson. Nice to have you back with us.
Good to be with you again, Gary. And I just want to say again how much I appreciate your making this information available to the public.
Thank you. Let us now take a journey, and I'm going to get you into it and turn it over to you to guide us in almost a classroom of the air. It is my belief that we could do a lot more individually and with the proper type of therapy to overcome a lot of conditions that all we're doing now is maintaining with a high level of toxic or functional drugs instead of looking at what else might be available as some adjuvant or alternative approach to conditions.
I think you're right on track.
Could you go through some of the things that you have found and others have also reinforced we could be using that are not natural, non-toxic, and actually make us healthier because they allow us to understand real underlying cause of disease? The forum is yours.
Well, if we go back even to the studies that have been around for a couple of decades now and reported in the New England Journal of Medicine in the 1980s, is that 80% of the symptoms people take to their primary care physicians are stress-related. Now, how many are dealt with that way in medical offices? Very, very few, and if they're dealt with at all, they're given pills to try to reduce the stress, which only temporarily masks the symptoms. But if we look at the bottom line of this whole thing, stress even begins back in infancy, sometimes in the uterus, in early childhood. We know that all the theories say that our personalities are formed by the time of age 5. But who of us remembers more than 3 or 4 or 5 memories of that time? Yet our programming has gotten in place at that time. So what happens then to do with stress? If we've had times of deprivation as infants or as little children, a lot of criticism, a lot of abandonment, abuse maybe, on the other hand, or a lot of pressure to do this, that, or the other, and on we can go with the sources of stress, that gets encoded as information back in the survival brain, the limbic system. Once it's there in place, anything that resembles it at all triggers it, excites it, sets it off again. Before you know it, you have the limbic system pouring out stress hormones endlessly, on and on and on and on and on. And what happens when we do that? It constricts the blood flow away from our frontal lobes. It dumbs us down. We can't think clearly. We can't do problem solving creatively. But even more relevant here to what we're talking about is that it takes the blood flow away from our stomachs and puts it into the arms and legs as if we've got to go into fight or flight. What does that do? Keeps the stomach from digesting our food. So even if we're eating good nutrients, then the body just does not digest it, but we're not taking care of the source of the stress. And certainly if we try to fix these things just with a medication or another external procedure, all we're doing is just perpetuating the problem. But if we can use the tools that go back and identify these traumas, shut down that flow of cortisol and adrenaline in the limbic system, help us be more at peace. And if I'm more at peace in my mind, then all the cells of my body are more at peace. And if my cells are more at peace, then there's not going to be dis-ease. We even use the word that way, disease. It's dissing our ease. And if we've done that in so many ways, how could we not but get sick sooner or later? We also know that if we have a big trauma in adult life, we can get a little sickness within a few hours. But we also know we might get a very serious one within a year or so if we don't clear that out. Now, what is all this stress? What is all this stuff with trauma? It's just encoding of information back in the survival brain. If our brain is a prototype of the computer, we can look at the computer and learn a little bit how the brain works. And if we look at it that way, we can see in our computer, if we have a program we don't like, we can press a delete button on it, and it's gone. We can install a new program. So cannot we do the same thing in our own brains? Of course we can. But not in just the traditional methods, which I was originally trained in, most of them actually, and practiced them and taught them. But more recently, we now know that we can use consciousness combined with subtle energy or stimulation of the left and right hemispheres of the brain. One of those processes we can bring together to use, and they can actually clear out that encoding of information so there's no longer an emotional charge on those old painful experiences. What does that do? It shuts down the flow of the cortisol, that the stress hormone. It also allows us to think clearly, allows us to function better, which then reduces stress too, because I can think more clearly, I can be more intelligent, I can be more creative in my problem solving. So if we just did that one thing only, just cleared out traumas. I imagine, for example, if you had somebody in a school system, teach the teachers to do 5 minutes twice a week, one of those tapping procedures on the energy meridians around the face and the torso, not even telling aloud what it is, but to clear out the traumas they've had with their parents fighting or being hit or beaten or being rejected or bullied by the bully on the playground or whatever it might be. But just have them focus on that. Do these tappings with the idea of clearing it. You'd have a lot less sickness in people as they grow up. They perform better in school. They get sick less often. They would not get sick so much as adults because they would cumulatively keep all this stuff cleared out. One simple thing like that could make a huge difference. Or another thing, when people go into a hospital and have surgery, they're traumatized by that. That's never dealt with. The trauma of the surgery, the trauma of the diagnosis, the trauma of the prognosis, all of these are severe traumas to people. What if, as part of a discharge procedure, when they came out, had somebody do a process that clears out the effect of that trauma? I bet the healing would go so much faster. The recurrence of other illnesses would go way, way down. These are ways we could save our healthcare system. Then once we do these kind of things, then once we then can get our barriers to doing healthy things like eating well, sleeping well, exercising, meditating, and all those kind of things, if we get our barriers to those out of the way, we're more likely to actually do them and do them more regularly. And they're going to have a lot more positive effect as well. Because what can happen, too, is once we've had those painful experiences, we develop a belief system about ourselves or about life. We believe that, oh, I'm get the same illness my parents did, or everybody in the family has to get this. Somebody sneezes on me, I have to get a cold. You know, all those kind of things, you know, happen. I better get the vaccination or I'll get the flu this year, even though the vaccination may give you a round of it. All that stuff goes on in our culture when instead we can just do these kind of clearings. We can clear out the belief that I don't deserve good health. My surveys around the country, all around the U.S., have found that 80 to 82% of people do not believe they deserve or it's not safe to be totally healthy and happy.
Why?
And the other 18% have shown that they have one or the other.
go back to that statement. That's very important. You said that up to 80% of people don't believe that they should be healthy or happy. My question exactly. is, why?
Because they have some belief that came out of their early painful experiences. When they've been rejected, when they've not been listened to, when their feelings are not being considered, when they've been pressured, when they've been abandoned, when all this sort of stuff, the little child will think, well, they're the gods, they're right, must be something wrong with me. I'm the one at fault, so I'm no good, I'm not deserving, I'm not worthy, and that sort of thing. And those conclusions get drawn by the little kids. And once those kids develop those beliefs about themselves, they start playing it out in every area of their lives.
Hmm.
And that's what happens as part of our human condition. But we don't have to be stuck in this condition is the point that I'd like to make, is that we can do something about that. We can reprogram our brains like you can reprogram a computer.
Okay, now in a moment I'm going to ask you if you would please to go through how we can reprogram our brains. But we also, I'm looking at the clock in advance, in about 5 minutes from now, most of the land-based stations carrying the program will sign off. However, we have an additional 5 minutes over the Internet. If people would like to continue listening to Dr. Grayson talk about this, I'm going to give you a number to call. And this is a wonderful service. And I'm told, I don't know how accurate it is because it was already a week over, almost 60,000 people are listening over the telephone, a lot of people. And by the way, this is a number, based upon the current number of people each night, Henry, downloading the programs, 12,640,000 this year. Not bad for wonderful. Not ever having any publicity. No, just word of mouth. Anyhow, people can call 832-280-0066. 832-280-0066. If you would like to hear the program when it goes off the land base, or just go to the network and you can listen there. Dr. Grayson's also has a program in Libby on tomorrow at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network called Mindful Living. And also, anyone who is confused, if you want to see the new documentary for free, just go to Gary Nall TV, Gary Nall TV, and it's there free. Now, over to you. Take us through how we can reprogram ourselves.
I'll give one simple first aid measure that we can use very quickly all the time when we have little disturbances. So rather than staying disturbed, so the stress hormones keep flowing and we keep being worked up, we can do one simple thing. Bring your right hand up over the chest, over the thymus gland. It touches over the heart as well. You put it flat on your chest. I call it the thymus heart rub. It's a self-soothing procedure because most of us in our culture don't know how to give ourselves self-soothing that calms us and quiets us. That's not an unhealthy procedure. We mostly turn to alcohol. We turn to drugs. We turn to addictions of every kind. We're the most addicted culture in the history of mankind now. But this one is one who doesn't hurt you, has no harmful side effects. But if you rub that upper chest and say you're really, really angry at somebody, or you're really hurt by what they did, or you're totally frightened by something that happened with your boss or with your spouse or with your child, just say, I deeply love and accept myself, even though I'm feeling so scared right now, as you rub the upper chest. I deeply love and accept myself, even though I'm mad as hell at so-and-so right now. And say that 5 or 10 times. I have people reporting to me all the time that if they just do that, what a major shift that makes in them. And if they do it each time they have a disturbance, they keep the stress level down. They keep bringing it back down. Rather than letting it snowball down the hill, they bring it down, and they bring it down. But one that goes to a deeper place that I find that I like to use, especially for deeper traumas or deep-set beliefs or whatever, is one that's what I call meridian therapies. It's based on the old Chinese system of acupuncture, but you just touch the points rather than sticking needles in them. And that system, what it was, is if you stimulated that system, that meridian that's connected to a certain organ that represents negative emotions, as you stimulate it, the negative emotion goes down and the positive one comes up in its place. They're seeing that the natural course for us is health and wellness if you get the barriers out of the way. So I like that kind of an attitude, you know, that we have about illness. That's the body's natural tendency if we're not interfering with it with all these other additives and methods that do harm. So anyway, we could simply focus on the trauma I had, that teacher in the fourth grade that put me down in front of the class, or my father whacking me in front of my friends when I was 6 years old and embarrassing me to death, or scaring me, or whatever the trauma might be, or the trauma of my parents divorcing and seeing my father walk out of the house. Bring the fingers up to the forehead and hold them there in the center of the forehead around the third eye, and just take some slow, deep breaths to relax. And as you breathe and relax, you focus on that trauma, that painful experience that you remember, recent one or a distant one. Identify the emotion that goes with it. And once you've identified it and see where you feel it in your body, bring your fingers a tiny bit over to the eyebrow, right up next to the nose, and say, I release all fear related to this trauma. And then take a slow, deep breath. And then bring your fingers over to the outside edge of the eye, that bone on the outside edge, and say, I release all anger, resentment, and rage related to this trauma. And breathe slowly and deeply. Often just focusing on these in that way helps bring those into awareness that we had those feelings. And we're releasing them. Under the eye, and that bone underneath, say, I release all anxiety related to this trauma or this negative belief, whichever you're clearing. And take a deep breath again just to reflect and assimilate that. And the breath work, the slow, deep breaths each time, help you balance it and contain the emotions that might be connected in that trauma so it never overwhelms you then, as long as you do the slow, deep breathing. Then under the nose, and I release all embarrassment related to these traumas. And breathe slowly and deeply once again. Then under the bottom lip, and I release all shame and guilt related to these traumas. And as you breathe slowly and deeply, let yourself relax and let that guilt or feelings of shame go, both of which are so related to so many of our illnesses, guilt and shame. So many studies supporting that. And then under the arm, and I release all worry and excessive concern related to these traumas or this trauma. And take a deep breath again. And then to bring the fingers of both hands to the bottom of the rib cage. The actual position is directly under the nipples on each side, but at the bottom of the rib cage. And as you hold that spot, say, I release all hurt and sadness related to these traumas. And breathe. And of course, we have a lot of hurt and sadness if we've been traumatized or we've had pains. Then bring the hand up over the heart, and just to help bring about the healing, breathe in love and exhale fear several times with several slow, deep breaths. And as you breathe in love, you might picture some scene somewhere, sometime, where you felt a purity of love, either towards someone or from someone, and then exhale fear. Just identifying with that force within you helps bring in healing and calm. And bringing ease, and opposing the dissing of ease. And then bring your fingers to the collarbone on one side or the other, about where a button-down shirt collar would be, touching the bone and slightly below it, and just take a couple of deep breaths. Then what you want to do then is just tune in and see how much disturbance do you think might remain to your trauma on a 10-point scale. If it's anything, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or an 8, whatever it is, if it's still some there at all, repeat that same process. And by the way, you can get a free download of that, no charge at all. Go into my website. You can download it, watch it, and work along with it. So you can have some my voice guiding you. It's just henrygrayson.com, G-R-A-Y-S-O-N. And you can get a free download there of this process. And you can use it as many times as you want, following along it to clear any trauma, any painful experience, any negative belief, anything like that that you want, disturbance that you have, and you don't have to let it accumulate. Or if you remember one from childhood, you can go back and clear that one.
Well, Henry, this is great information, and I appreciate you coming on. And this is what you hear every week at 7 p.m. on Saturdays on the Progressive Radio Network on Mindful Living with Dr. Henry Grayson. Henry, all the best, and I appreciate you coming back and going into detail on this with us.
Good to be with you again, Gary, and I appreciate all the work you're doing to inform people of these other realities.
Thank you. Dr. Henry Grayson. By the way, next hour, we're going to have Roseanne Barr. Roseanne Barr will be on the next hour, the Smart Show. We have Luann Panessi here. And Luann, we don't have much time before the next show starts. Could you say hello, and what is the issue to address?
Well, actually, I was going to read a wonderful piece that one of our retreaters wrote. You know, we've been getting testimonials pouring in about the retreat, and it was 2 weeks. Some people stayed for one, some people stayed for two. And I have to tell you, there were some remarkable breakthroughs in people that had a lot to do with exactly what Dr. Grayson was talking about, releasing the pain, not having to dwell on your stories. And it was just, it was an amazing experience. I was down there the first week. So maybe the next show I'll be able to read some of the testimonials and some of the responses that people had.
Oh, sounds great. Okay, good. Well, that'll be then. And if anyone does want to drive up on Sunday for the Litchfield International Film Festival, where I have two films in competition and we'll be there and seeing some films and attending the film festival in the afternoon, give our office a call at 646-926-5422. Have a nice day, everyone.
Oops, upside your head. Say 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 oops, upside your head.
Hello! I'm back at you again.
Upside your head.
Radio station is
WGAP. Say oops, upside your head. Say oops, upside your head.
Now on all you gafflers, and you finger snappers, you toe tappers, and you love lappers, I want y'all to say this with me.